Well, good morning. We have been, as John said, in the series in the book of Daniel called OMG, with kind of an emphasis for us on the M. We've been talking about how the supernatural becomes personal, how this distant, far away God becomes my God, where the faith becomes my faith, where faith really becomes personal. And so throughout the process, we've been looking at King Nebuchadnezzar, who's kind of like the Joseph Stalin of his day, worldwide ruler, powerful, very evil. In that Jewish kind of 9/11 moment, he overthrows Jerusalem, murders a bunch of people, but he takes 10,000 young people back to Babylon with him to kind of inculcate them with Babylonian culture. And of that group is the lead character of the book, Daniel, and his three friends. And so they're kind of ripped away, torn away from everything they know, everything that's familiar from their families. They're probably 14 to 15-year-old boys at this time in their life. And so total change for them. So the theme of the series, what we've talked about, is that tests create trust. And it's this whole idea, as we watch Daniel and his three friends, Kale was here last week, talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or as the great African-American preacher E.V. Hill called them, Shadrach, Meshach, and a bit Negro. Why don't I think of things like that? I wish I could think of something like that. We see them, that they grow through, not go through, not more willpower, put your head down, work it out, but it's they grow through these tests. And so in some ways, one of the things that I love about Daniel and his three friends, or they're kind of like the original missionaries, if you will. The first people that God kind of intentionally sends to another country to kind of spread and share his glory. And we talk about missions around here. One of the things that we say is that missions is more about who you are than it is about what you do. We have the tendency to think missions, we tend to think, well, I'm going to go on a mission trip, or I'm going to give some money to some missionaries. Instead of missions being more about the heart of God, the kingdom heart, the kingdom values of God flowing through us out to the world, and not just through us individually, but through us as a body. And so one of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the year when we did our vision message back in January is that we said we wanted to try and do this year a better job of praying together, and especially praying together towards the world. So one of the initiatives that we're gonna kind of jump into this week is we're gonna kind of try and begin that process of praying more together, even though throughout the week we are separate. So if you got your smartphone, if you have one, please take it out if you don't mind, and open up your calendar on your smartphone. And here's what we're gonna ask you to do. We're gonna ask you to, on Tuesday mornings at 10:02 a.m. to set an alarm on your phone. And Tuesday mornings at 10:02, when you hear that alarm, you can go to our Twitter feed, our Facebook feed, our missions page on our website, and there will be every week a new prayer request there for all of us to pray about together regarding the world. Now, the reason it's 10:02 is because Luke 10:2 says that Jesus says there that we should pray that God would send more leaders into more places around the world to see more life change, to see his name spread throughout the world. So if you wouldn't mind setting your alarm, now I know some of you are super spiritual and you're gonna say, I'm gonna set that alarm every day. Love it, set it every day. Our ask is that you would at least do it on Tuesday. We're calling it Tuesday 10:02, praying. If you feel like, man, that's gonna be kind of overwhelming for me, what if on the second, or on the first Tuesday of every month, maybe, or the second Tuesday, I guess you could do it that way if you want to, you could set an alarm and you could pray once a month and you could check out what God is doing and what we're praying for at that time. Or if you're really, really lame, set it on October the 2nd once a year, okay? And you can pray at least once a year, right? For what God is doing around the world and what God wants to do through us as we begin to try and find ways to pray together more about God's name and God's glory being big in the world. Because what we see in the narrative with Daniel is that in the first three chapters now, Nebuchadnezzar is starting to, it seems like his heart is starting to open up to God. And as a matter of fact, right off the bat in chapter one, he talks about his praise and his honor of Daniel's God. The problem with that is that we see that really for Nebuchadnezzar, it's just words. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that he's saying the right things, but he's really not regarding God in his heart. The main god in Babylon was the god Bel, that was kind of a lizard-like god. And so that kind of occupied the top shelf, if you will, in Nebuchadnezzar's heart. And so what Nebuchadnezzar's done is he said, you know what? There's the god of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and I see that god doing some pretty incredible things. So what he's kind of done is he's kind of put God up on the top shelf with this god, Bel. Now, what we're going to learn today is that when it comes to God, that's not good enough. That God wants to occupy the top space, the top shelf in our hearts. And there are moments where it seems like God will do almost anything to gain our attention and our affections. That's what we're going to look at in Daniel chapter 4. So you can turn over there if you'd like to read along. The verses will be up on the screens as well. We're going to start reading in verse 4. It says this: I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous. I had a dream that made me afraid. And as I was lying in the bed, the images and visions that passed through my head and my mind terrified me. Finally, Daniel came into my presence and I told him the dream. So Nebuchadnezzar, he's got this dream, makes him afraid. He calls for Daniel, and here's what happens. As he tries to explain what's going on in the dream, he says this angel shows up and says, cut down the tree, trim off its branches, let his mind be changed from that of a man, let him be given that of an animal till seven times pass by before him. So what happens in the dream is that Nebuchadnezzar is content. In the middle of the dream, this big tree grows up. It's a tree the whole world can see. It's visible to everyone. But then an angel shows up and says, we're going to cut this tree down. We're going to trim off its branches. And then he says to Daniel, please tell me, Daniel, tell me what this means. When you look down in verse 24, here's what Daniel says. Here's the interpretation. O king, it is a decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that you shall be driven from among men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and you shall be made to eat grass like an ox. You shall be made wet with the dew of heaven, and for seven periods of time, or 7 years, it shall pass over you till you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whom he will. Now, what Daniel says in the in-between pieces of the narrative that we haven't been able to read is that he says to King, King, please listen to what I'm telling you. This dream that you're having is not just a dream. It's really a prophecy that God has given you that says, listen, you think you sit in your palace content and prosperous because of what you've done, but it's all been a gift that God has put in your hands, that God has given you. So, King, why don't you turn your heart to God? Why don't you not just let this be just words to you? And why don't you commit your heart and commit your way and commit your life to it? And if I could just echo what Shane said, when love is coming by, this love is greater than the kind of love that comes from God. Take that moment, King. Take advantage of it. But Nebuchadnezzar doesn't. And he sits on this dream for a year. You look down at verse 29. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace in Babylon, he said, is this not the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled, and he was driven away from the people and ate grass like an ox, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird. Now, what happens to Nebuchadnezzar, and we'll talk about the resolution to the narrative here in just a minute, but I think there are two things in the narrative that jump out, at least to me, that are very applicable for us. There's an either or, and there's a both and. So let's talk about the either or first. The thing that becomes readily apparent to me is that you can either have a God, or you can have the God, but you can't have both. It's an either or scenario. You can either have a God or multiple gods in your life, but you can't have gods and the God. This scenario right here that you're looking at, this is top shelf scenario. This is not gonna work. And I know what's pretty easy for us to say is that, well, you know, Dean, they're kind of ancient and they weren't as smart as we are. They don't know what we know today. So we're not kind of like that. And I would say, while we may not put little gods up on our shelves physically, that we are a lot like that. I think what we tend to do, even though maybe we don't put an alligator head up there, we put other things up there. Maybe it's for you, it's success at work. Maybe it's promotions, and those kind of go up on the top shelf. Or maybe for you, I don't know, maybe it's a hobby. It's something that you do. And that thing, when that hobby gets touched and you get off track with that hobby, it wrecks your world. Or maybe for some of us, it's finances, it's our income, and we put that up on the top shelf. Or maybe for you, it's family for you, right? And that's the thing that you put up there so high, even though you probably wouldn't say it, it's right up there, and your family becomes the filter for how you make all of your decisions, and it becomes apparent in your emotions. And I would say that while we may not have little mini gods up on our shelves, what we find out is that there's a whole lot of things that compete with God for top shelf in our lives, and God's just not gonna have it. So it doesn't matter if it's one of these things or if it's something else. If it's whenever you get worried, you go shop or you overeat or you do whatever that thing is in your life. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe it's an addiction to alcohol, or it's an addiction to a drug or something like that. And that becomes top shelf. It becomes how you manage your life. Even for a lot of us, it becomes time. It becomes our calendar. That's what's God in our lives. And there's so many things that we find that compete with God for that top shelf spot in our hearts, because we're all broken. If we admit it, there's something there. And what I'm going to say to us today is that we've got to reject what I'm going to call the Brill Cream approach to spirituality. And I kind of need a volunteer to help me. And so Ian's gonna volunteer. He's sitting right up here. I'll introduce you to Ian. Ian is interning with us this summer in our worship and arts area, and doing a great job. And we're glad you're here. So by the way, you gotta be a certain age, I figured, to know what Brill Cream is, right? So if you're not 40 plus, you probably don't remember that Brill Cream is a hair product that was really popular back in the 50s and 60s. In the 70s, Brill Cream, they developed not just a kind of a styling gel product, but they also developed a hair coloring project, which obviously the ads didn't have an effect on me, right? You laughing at my hair color? Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. So did you comb your hair today?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not that I can't tell. I don't mean that. So do you remember, if you're older, a little older, you remember what Brill Cream's, what their slogan was? Brill Cream, a little dab will do you, right? Matter of fact, I'll show you one of their ads from the 60s. There's Dick Clark whenever he was young. So here's what we're going to do. Ian, if you just turn around there and just kind of wet your hair, just put your head right down in there. Just your whole head. Yeah, right. There you go, buddy. Good job. Good job. Super. Now I got a towel for you. I want you to. There we go, buddy. There we go. Okay. So here's what I'm gonna do. Give you a little dab there. All right. Now put that on your hair, and we'll style it up. Yeah. Yeah. Just put a little bit in there. Yeah. So this is what a little dab of Brill Cream will do you, right? Right? Not so good, right? I mean, I'm not saying Brill Cream were liars, but they kind of were. But here's what we're going to try. Here we go. Here. So let's see what a lot of Brill Cream will do you. Okay? Lather it up, buddy. Lather it up. Yeah? Yeah? Hell yeah! Now just turn around here for a second. I'm going to help you out.
Please?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Yes, sir. And Ian is unsuspecting because he had no idea this was happening this morning at Life Point. All right. Now then, turn around and show everybody. Come on. Come on. Very nice, Ian. Ian, here's your $15 gift card to Chipotle.
Thank you.
With that haircut and that gift card, you're a hot date today, buddy. Thanks, man. You guys, thank Ian for helping me. They say, Dean, why are you going through all this? Here's why. Because here's what a lot of us do. A lot of us allow our kids to run our lives, and then we come around and we say, I'm just going to put a little dab of Jesus on there. For a lot of us, maybe it's other things. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's an addiction that you have. Maybe it's an addiction to a drug or an alcohol addiction that you have. Or maybe for some of us, whenever things start to fall apart in your life and you worry and anxiety and you run to shopping or you run to food or you run to whatever that thing is that occupies top shelf in your life, somehow we feel like if I could just stick a little dab of Jesus on there. What we see in Nebuchadnezzar is that just doesn't work. What we need to be, if I can say it to you this way, is lathered up, saturated with the presence of God in our lives. Because a little dab won't do you. You can have either a God or gods, or you can have the God. But you can't have both. That's the either or. Now, the next thing is the both and. And it's this idea that you can have both grace and consequences. Both grace and consequences. One of the things that's interesting to me from the narrative is that it takes a year from the point of where Nebuchadnezzar has the dream to this point where he kind of loses it. And there's a year in there, there's a year of grace for him, a year of time for him to turn his heart away from his gods to the God. But after that year, there's a line there. And when he hits that line, he begins to experience the consequences of his choices. And Daniel's developed this friendship with him. And what I think's really interesting from the narrative is that you don't see Daniel going out to try and rescue Nebuchadnezzar. For 7 years, he experiences a condition. It's a condition today that we call zoanthropy. It's when a person somehow, because of some trauma, feels like they've become an animal and they go out and they live outside. This actually happens to people. Their hair grows long down here. Their nails grow long and thick. And so this happens to Nebuchadnezzar for 7 years. And you don't see Daniel running out in the field trying to give him a manicure, trying to clean him up. You don't see Daniel out there trying to cut his hair, you know, make him feel more like a human, less like an animal. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is because you know Daniel has developed this friendship with Nebuchadnezzar, so that had to be really, really hard to watch your friend go through this. So I just want to say to us today, there's a distinct line between the compassion to encourage someone and the compulsion to intervene in God's activity. And I'm gonna tell you, it's a very, very fine line. And it's very, very hard. It's very, very difficult when you as a parent have a child who's walking into rebellion. It's very hard to watch because you know the consequences that can come from that. And it's very hard not to intervene, not to jump in and try and rescue. Do you know what it's like to have a friend or a family member, a sibling, right, a brother, a sister, and you're watching them make rebellious choice after rebellious choice after rebellious choice? In the back of your mind, you're thinking there's going to be consequences and consequences and consequences because, listen, God gives grace and grace and grace, but eventually we experience the consequences of our choices. It's very difficult to have a friend and to watch that and to not want to jump in with both feet, try and be a fixer. We got some of your fixers out here. You want to fix everything, make everybody okay, everybody feel good, make everything all right. There's a fine line between the compassion to encourage and the compulsion to try and take over and intervene. And what I think is unique about Daniel is that in this situation, Daniel is willing to, for the short term, he's willing to say, okay, God, you do what you do. I'm gonna put Nebuchadnezzar in your hands for the short term. And you're gonna shape his heart through this crisis moment, through the tests that create trust. In the middle of this crisis moment, I'm gonna put him in your hands for the short term because I see what you're trying to do in Nebuchadnezzar in the long run, for the long term. And the short-term pain is worth the long-term change. And for those of you who've been through that, or are walking through that now. You know what it's like when somebody is going through a struggle with an addiction and you watch them experience the pain of that. But then on the backside, you've seen the change that it makes year to year to year to year to year. The short-term pain is worth it. And here's how much it's worth it in Nebuchadnezzar's life. Verse 34, Nebuchadnezzar says this, "And at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High, honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generations. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven because everything he does is right and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble." Nebuchadnezzar, these are his own words. But the thing is, they're no longer just words. All of a sudden, Nebuchadnezzar has gone through this process. He's experienced these consequences. And now he takes ownership of his faith to the degree that he says, "And everything that God does is right." So that brings me to a few conclusions. The first of which is this. What I learned from Nebuchadnezzar in this process, it tells me that no one is too far away to experience the goodness and the grace of God. No one is too far away. Because there's probably somebody here today in a crowd the size of our 9:30 crowd or our 11 o'clock crowd, there's probably somebody who's here today who thinks, "You know what, man, I'm totally out of place. Here I am in church, somebody invited me, I'm here, I'm totally out of place." If everyone in this room knew what I have done, whether that's years ago or yesterday, if everyone knew what I have done, I mean, I'm surprised the roof isn't caving in on me because I'm actually in a church building and a church service on Sunday. And I would just say to you, if you'll look to your right and you'll look to your left, you look behind you, the row behind you and the row in front of you, I know those people. I know what kind of sinners. They've out-sinned you 10 to 1 and they look just as, you know, nice and kind as you do and all. But listen, everyone in the room, we're all, self-included, incredibly broken. And we all have a past. We all have a story. And I want to tell you, from my story in particular and from the stories of the people in this room, that no one is too far away to experience the grace and the goodness of God. But if I can borrow from this whole idea of zoanthropy, this whole thing that Nebuchadnezzar went through when he lost his mind. You know what the New Testament says about us, those of us who are broken by sin, all of us in the same boat. The New Testament says over and over and over again about us that we act like beasts. We act like animals. 2 Peter chapter 2, Simon Peter says there, he says we act like brute beasts. Jude chapter 1, I think it's Jude chapter 1, or like there's only one chapter in Jude, but it's verse 10 of chapter 1. It says that like beasts, like animals, we corrupt ourselves with our own. What's the idea? What's the New Testament trying to say to us? It's saying that you and I will make choices based on instinct, human instinct. What makes me feel better? What do I want? I want things this way, a specific idea. It's going to be my way. I'm going to do what I want, when I want, just operating out of my own human instinct. And they say that we're in that way, we're like animals. However, God has created us uniquely with his image in us that gives us the opportunity to know him. So we don't have to act like animals, like beasts. Whenever you see things get in a chaotic state, we've seen cities over the past year when people begin to riot and you watch people and you're like, what are they? They're acting like animals. And left to our own devices, that's how we're gonna operate. That's how we're gonna make choices. We're gonna make decisions. You ever go to the zoo and you see a gorilla or you see an ape and you get a bunch of people in there and he gets a little bit nervous and you see him stand up and he starts to pound his chest? What's he doing? He's showing a sign of strength. He's marking his territory. He gets a little nervous and he pounds his chest. You say, yeah, but Dean, he's a It's an animal. That's what animals do. You ever watch, you watch much NBA these days? You ever watch when an NBA player goes and makes a layup? You know, he makes a layup like from a foot away and he comes out from underneath the basket and what does he do? Why does he do that? It's a sign of strength. You know what the scriptures say in Luke chapter 23 that the people who crucified Jesus did when the crucifixion was over? It says they went back to their homes beating their breasts because they thought, look at what we have done. Look how much stronger we are than this man who called himself the Son of God. God who left heaven, who came to earth, lived a perfect life for us in our place. He dies there on the cross, offers himself for us, put in the ground, and here we are, human beings, beating ourselves in the chest like brute beasts. But what happens is that 3 days later, God turns the tables on us. And Jesus beats death through the power of the resurrection, through him being raised from the dead. He beats death not only for himself, not for a show of strength for himself, but for a show of strength for ourselves, for the very people who own up to our brokenness, right? He's there for us, not so that we can live in our strength, but so that he can give us his strength. So I want to say to you one more time, if you're here today and you feel like, man, there is no chance for me, no one is too far away. The second thing I want to say, if you're here today and you're watching somebody, maybe somebody that you love, walk through a period of rebellion and they are experiencing consequences, or maybe they're on the front side of it and you know the consequences are coming, incredibly difficult. And you say, man, what do I do? I don't know everything for you to do, but I'll say this. Start by praying. And listen, on these Tuesday 10-2 prayers that we're setting alarms on our smartphone for, maybe what you say is, you know what? Every week I'm gonna pray for whatever that mission cause is, that thing we're praying for, but I'm gonna attach to that prayer every week a prayer for this person, this friend, this family member, this child who's going through this and is experiencing these consequences, that they're gonna have a Nebuchadnezzar moment where they're going to say, you know what? I praise and I exalt the God of heaven, and everything he does is right. And I know for some of you, especially some of you parents, you're praying for that day. And then lastly, I want to say to you, those of us who, for lack of a better way to say it, you feel like you're kind of Christian. And maybe what you would say is, yep, that's me. It's God plus my wallet, or it's God plus my hobbies. I'll just say to us that there is no kind of Christian. There's no middle. There's no space where God says he will occupy the top shelf of your heart with. You can either have a God or the God, but you can't have both. A little dab of Jesus is not gonna make a significant difference in terms of changing your heart. What you need, what I need, is to be lathered up, filled with the presence of who God is on a daily, hour by hour, moment by moment, second by second basis, to the degree that broken humanity can be, to see our lives begin to change so that we see ourselves becoming part of the mission for God's name to grow and become big in the world. Let's pray together. Father, thank you that you came and that you offered yourself for us in our place. And God, I just pray for anybody who is here today, who's right on that line of making decision for taking advantage of everything that you have done for them in the cross, for offering themselves back to you. God, I pray that maybe today will be the day, the moment where they put themselves back into your hands, bring themselves under your authority. And then, Lord, I pray for maybe folks who are here today who are watching, somebody that they care about, somebody that they love, make some really, really tough choices and experience some really tough consequences. And God, I pray that you'll give them the wisdom of Daniel to be there, to care, to love, but not to try and fix. That's so hard. And then, God, for those of us today who are struggling with trying to mix just a little bit of you with a lot of this culture and a little bit of you with a lot of our instincts. And Lord, I pray you'll show us the failure of that, and that we would allow you to occupy top shelf in our hearts and in our lives. God, we just offer ourselves to you. And it's in your name we pray.